Would you give your mum, dad, aunt or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video. Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got six comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising
people. Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters, May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
Mintmobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 531.24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact. You can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. United Healthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about United Healthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Welcome to Conversations Against Living Miserably, a podcast where we try to find solace in a world where our brains are usually against us.
My name is Aaron Gillis, and each week I'll be joined by...
me, Lauren Patterson. Each week we chat to different guests about how they try and live their life without misery, but we try and do it with a little bit of laughter, because otherwise that sounds like a pretty gloomy idea for a podcast.
This podcast is brought to you in partnership with Dave, the TV channel, and Calm, the campaign against living miserably. Welcome to episode 10. We've made 10 episodes of these now, and thank you so much for sticking around with us. It really does mean a lot. It couldn't have been easy for you. This week's guest is Ahir Shah. Ahir is a stand-up comedian whose 2018 show Duffer was nominated for the best show at the comedy... at the Edinburgh Comedy Awards, even, not just the Comedy Edinburgh Comedy Awards. His new show Dots will be at this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival, and if Duffer is anything to go by, it'll be bloody excellent, because that was a... It was my favourite show of last year's Fringe, anyway. This week, we talked to Ahir about honesty on stage, the weird side effects of medication, and getting beaten with leaves. As always, if you could like, subscribe, rate, review, whatever you do with your little podcast app, if you could recommend the podcast to everyone you've met or everyone you may ever meet, that would be amazing, as the ad money we make from this podcast goes to Calm, and the more people that listen, that just means the more money that goes to Calm. And by listening today, you're technically donating, so you can feel really smug for the rest of the day because you're donating to charity as we speak, or as I speak. You're not speaking. I mean, you could be speaking. Anyway, that's enough from me. Here's Lauren and myself talking to Ahir Shah.
Hello, welcome back. Or if you've just been...
Why do we start it with welcome back?
Like, yeah. When did this happen? But to be fair, we are talking to people with anxiety, so they have probably just sat in one place.
That's true.
Like, we haven't been given further instructions. I don't know if I'm allowed to leave. We are joined today by Ahir Shah.
Hello.
And my phone still to this day autocorrects shit to Ahir. Which is the opposite of what you were saying in your show.
Yeah,
you were
like, so it autocorrects my first name to shit and my surname to shag.
But every time I type shit, it just corrects it to Ahir. Yeah. I'm like, God.
It's become a really fun running thing where every so often I'll just get a text from someone on the circuit who I haven't spoken to in like 3 months. It's just like, my phone does shit to Ahir now.
Yeah. It's such a piece of Ahir. Yeah. Our first question, which we ask everybody, is when was the last time you felt calm?
The last time I felt calm... Oh. Actually, I genuinely know the answer to this. Because I was thinking about this on the way because, to be perfectly honest, I had a very difficult spring. So the last few months I have been very far from calm. Mm-hmm. So I was trying to think of one, but it's just sprung into my head, which was at the beginning of March, I was doing review for the Sunday Times Magazine beauty section. Every so often they have men's issue and they get someone to go in and do sort of weird treatment that you might not usually get. So the person who did the feature before me had their the entirety of their nether regions waxed. And I was like, right, I don't think I'd find that calming. So that's, I don't want my ass waxed for money. Basically the thing.
I would like that on record, please.
Yeah, not yet that desperate. But so instead, what they had me do, I went to the South Kensington Club, which was very, very fancy and the sort of place that I would normally never be allowed to go. But I like felt full oligarch in this situation because I was like in this big ass robe. I was stealing shit from all over the place.
Nice.
So I was like, they just give you a toothbrush. Sure. Like, I need that. And like everyone else there was like sort of in their 50s and had more than one phone. And it's like, there is a lot of business being done here.
Yeah.
And I don't know how much of it is savory. They had a hammam and a banya thing. So I got the thing where you get like beaten with eucalyptus branches.
Ooh.
On your back. Not like heavily beaten.
Yeah.
But they sort of like effectively like hit steam into you.
Okay.
And you've got your head wedged between two wet eucalyptus branches so you can still breathe. And this guy's just like brushing this stuff against my back. And then he took me out into a pool and was just like, lie down, relax. And he held my head in his cupped hands. And I was just floating as he gently rocked me from side to side. Ooh. By my head.
That sounds good.
And it felt more like being in the womb than anything I have. But like, I imagine that that's what it felt like.
Yeah.
In the womb, and like I was like, the only way that this could feel more like that is if I was connected to my mum via an IV at this stage. And so then there was just this moment of genuine sort of clarity there, and they sent me like away for a massage and everything afterwards. And I had this moment where I was like, I feel really weird. What's going on here? This doesn't feel normal. And I realised it's that my internal monologue had just been silent for like a full minute.
Yeah.
And you're like, that never happens. This is a amazing. So yeah, I think that's, and it's making me quite happy even just remembering it now.
Yeah, sounds brilliant.
Yeah, so basically, if you're listening to this and you want to feel calm, get a Russian dude to beat you up with branches.
That's it. That's, yeah. Okay, end of podcast. Yeah. That's the message you need to take away from this one.
I feel like Matt's going to come home to just find me with someone cupping my head in like a bath of shallow water being like, it doesn't feel the same.
Or you're just trying to twat with a house plan.
Yeah.
Relax! What's wrong with him? Do you manage to bring calm into your day-to-day at all? Because that was quite like a specific one-off thing. Is there anything you do on a day-to-day basis that helps you level out a little bit? Or is...
I don't think I'm very good at it.
Mm.
And part of that is unfortunately just a consequence of the sort of thing that we do for a living, right? It's like you're constantly travelling around, you know, you find that it's like, oh, my voice feels very unpracticed at 8 in the evening, and you're like, oh, right, it's because I haven't spoken to another human being all day. That's an unusual thing, and it's not necessarily what we're built for. So part of it is just a function of the way that life goes, but have generally been trying to do better via the medium of terrible television recently,
yes.
Which is very soothing.
What's at the top?
At the moment, I'm watching the New York-based Sherlock Holmes series Elementary, where Johnny Lee Miller and Lucy Liu, Holmes and Watson, and they solve crimes in New York. And what I realised is, like, it really holds your hand as a show. It's like, you know those procedural things where, because I'm watching it on Now TV, so there are no ad breaks, but you can tell when the ad breaks would have been because a character just catches you up on literally everything that has happened. It's just like, have another dose of exposition every like 10 minutes. And so, like, it's just like, oh, I feel very safe with Sherlock.
Yeah. We started Law & Order SVU, which is proper prime trash American cop drama stuff. And it's bonkers. Like, literally every famous person in America America turns up in it. Robin Williams was a serial killer the other day. And it was like 2005, so it was famous Robin Williams. It's really fucking good.
Have you heard John Mulaney's bit about Law & Order SVU?
No.
It's amazing. Is it Ice-T in it? And it, like, my favourite thing about the show is how incredulous Ice-T is about absolutely everything that happens. So Ice-T will just be there. It's like, you're telling me that this guy gets off on little girls with pigtails? He's like, yeah, he's a pedophile. You work in the sex crimes division, you're going to have to get used to that.
I just want him to explain everything to me. Just like follow me around a supermarket and tell me what I'm doing.
Yeah, that is the thing.
When was the first time you ever... What's this question?
First time I became aware of mental
That's
health?
That's it. Sorry, I got lost. I got
Whether
lost
it's
my
like in a good way or a bad way, when was the first time that it crept into your bubble of awareness?
This is certainly for the better. It's certainly a the very fact that this sort of thing is taking place shows that the conversation's become a lot more prevalent now than perhaps it was. And I'm only 28, but certainly I remember, like, when I was a teenager and stuff like that, really wasn't something that I feel even a decade ago was really being spoken about. So there are lots of things that kind of retrospectively were like, oh, that period at university, that, like, in retrospect, I get that maybe there was something more at play there. But at the time, it's almost, you know, the limits of your language are the limits of your world. I didn't have the language for it, so I didn't know what was really going on. I was just like, I'm sure this isn't normal. But I think it's weirdly something that I still must in some way not be wholly aware of, in the sense that, like, I was listening to a competing podcast the other day.
Oh, God.
I was listening to an episode of Reply All.
Oh, yeah.
About an artist who decided to make, like, a photo collection of the way that depression felt. And she found that that sort of helped her through it. And one of the hosts was talking about his own experience and talking about the fact that it was very difficult for him to realise over the course of his 20s that not everyone felt like that all the time. Because obviously when it's something so personal and internal, it's like, I can't really imagine that someone else's brain doesn't function in the same way. So, of course, you think about that all the time in any sort of damaging thing. And I realised when I was listening to him say that, that I still hadn't fully come to terms with that reality. Like, I can never feel unusual to myself because it's the only way I've ever known how to be, right?
Yeah,
so, yeah, that makes sense.
I think So it's sort of an ongoing process of awareness.
Mm, yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. Because I was thinking about this similarly the other day, because I don't know if somebody asked this, or it might have been one of the podcasts I was listening to, and I was like, at what point did I go from being an anxious person to somebody who had anxiety? And I think, like, retrospectively, when I look back, I think I've always had anxious elements, but there was definitely a point where that flipped. But I'm like, or is it? Or is it that I just didn't? It said, that's the only thing I've ever known. So I was just like, that's just the way it is.
It's that beautiful thing of looking back as well and going, oh, yeah, I was obviously suffering with something then when I did this fucking stupid thing or did that stupid thing. And at the time, like you say, because the language, you don't know what the hell's going on.
I was even remembering right now, it's like, oh, remember that time near exams in your third year where you couldn't breathe for a few days? I was like, oh, yeah, at the time, I was just like, oh, I just got a tight chest, I guess maybe I've smoked a bit too much or something like that.
Yeah, indeed. Yeah, because I used to spend like 3 days in bed just doing absolutely nothing, not wanting to leave the house, and then go into work as like, I'm sure everyone does that. That's a completely normal human activity, isn't it? Not even watching TV or listening to the radio, just face down being miserable.
Yeah.
It's part of the human condition.
Yeah. I remember this might be my third year at uni, which I think is probably where, if I had to pinpoint a time, probably when the balance started to shift. And I remember I'd just seen the Lego movie because I was a responsible third year adult student and I wanted Taco Tuesday. I wanted to make tacos and have a Taco Tuesday, but I burnt the mints because I put the mints in the microwave or something and it literally went solid, like proper rock solid. I remember being stood in the kitchen sobbing and a flatmate coming in and being like, what's the matter? And I was like, I just wanted Taco Tuesday. And she was like, are you okay? And I, in my head, I was like, this is a completely normal reaction to have to burn in the mints. And she was like, do you maybe want to sit and have a chat? And I was like, that might be nice. And it's just them moments that come and burst your bubble when you're like, oh, I'm I'm not having a good moment.
Because you talk about your kind of mental health and stuff in your stand-up a bit, and as do you as well, Lauren. Do you find that it helps to kind of be able to speak about it in front of large audiences of people? Do you find it cathartic almost?
I guess in a way I find it cathartic, but also, like, it's an odd thing when, like, other people talk about the fact that it's beneficial for them that you're mentioning it. But it goes back to what I was saying previously of I don't find it unusual. I don't particularly enjoy it when audience members are like, oh, God, are you all right? Or is he all right? And it's just like, well, this is, it just is the way it is, you know? Like,
I was all right till you asked if I was all right.
One of the most civilized things you can do in conversation is not ask someone how they are. I do think it's vastly underrated. Absolutely. Generally, whenever someone's like, how are you? I'm like, great, so I've got to open with a lie here. Like, really annoying. It's like my the reason that I love the guy who does my hair so much, other than he's obviously excellent, is basically because we have quote unquote a cool job that people like asking about.
Ask questions.
And you get annoyed that, oh God, they're asking questions, but then you weirdly get annoyed when they don't either. And Craig has absolutely no interest in my career whatsoever. And his main hobby is hair. Like, but we're both the same. Like, we just work in the profession that is associated with our principal hobby. Yeah. And so we just chat about hair. You never ask how I am. I'm like, this is a lovely break from myself.
Yeah, indeed.
But yeah, sorry, to go back to the original thing. Yeah, it's just like, I don't know, it's weird when you say something and feel people's faces sort of tensing or changing, and you're like, oh, okay, that's weird, apparently.
That's a me thing, okay.
It's like when I drop a depression joke into a normal conversation, it's like, oh yeah, other people don't feel like that, do they? Just like, it's absolutely terrible.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I like how you use language to talk, like, the way you talk about mental health. I sound like such a little fangirl when I'm like, get some more examples of your jokes. But it's a line in when you're like, I've always been a mosh, but then I got diagnosed clinically totes a mosh. And I love that, because especially for, like, people, like, our age, I think that's just such a good way of putting it. And I think, I don't know, do you think, like, language, it's important for language to change as the discussions about mental health change?
I think so, because also there's something nice about sort of discussing things in a way that might be slightly less formal and less clinical. Everything. And it's like with any sort of serious point, like if you can add a tone of perhaps silliness or levity to the entire thing, like I think Maria Bamford's probably the best at it that I've heard anyone doing stand-up be with it, because she'll be talking about, like, super, super serious and personal and presumably difficult things to talk about, but then will bring in all of these characters and voices and undercut things with such, like, silly, fun punchlines that you're just in this world and it's like, oh, this is, like, I always feel like this is my mate talking about this and just comforts you in
that. I went to see Anne Edmonds in Melbourne, who's brilliant. She had a line and she was like, just talking dead candidly, and she went, that's probably about the time I lost my Marbies. It really made me belly laugh. Just how I've heard people say, like, lost my marbles, but I'd never heard just someone so, and in that lovely Aussie accent, I just lost my Marbies. And I was like, what a lovely way to be able to just laugh at a situation in your life, just with that one little beautiful phrase. I liked it.
Yeah, I had that when I was a teenager and I was in a writer's room, a bunch of different writers, and we're all like spitballing ideas and what have you. And someone mentioned something, and one guy, must have been in his 20s or something, but very frankly was like, oh, yes, so for example, when I went insane, I felt that Satan was talking to me from this. But it was all very like matter of fact and just sort of like, oh, yeah, of course, that's a thing, like. Yeah, why wouldn't we be discussing that?
Yeah, it's just it's the whole normalization of the subject, isn't it? Mm. It's just kind of, you speak candidly about it and you speak honestly about it, because the important thing is that you're fucking talking about it.
Yeah.
Like when I wrote my first book.
Check out Johnny Two Books over there.
Okay. Importantly, is this a phrase that you've heard? Because someone told me that this was a because this is reminding me of Johnny Two Shits.
What?
Johnny Two Shits. Is that a phrase that either of you have heard?
No, I've heard of Johnny Two Hats, but I think that's the Mighty Boosh.
Yeah, I think that's what I'm
Yeah.
Johnny this is Two
the
thing. Shits.
So basically, in the new stand-up show, I'm telling a story about this guy my dad knows who, like, nothing that anyone else ever does is good enough. He can best any story. And so I was saying this at a preview, and a dude comes up to me afterwards and says, oh, you know, there's a phrase for that. He's a right Johnny Two Shits. In the sense, like, if you've had one shit, Johnny's had two. And I was like, I've never heard this before in my life, and I've travelled all around the country. And
are you now just slowly introducing that phrase to everyone you meet?
And this guy was like, no, I promise you this is a phrase. And I said it last night at a preview. No one had ever heard it. Then you said Johnny Two Books, and I was like, oh, right, okay, maybe Lauren knows this thing. I feel a lot better, but no,
so
I'm still entirely alone in Johnny Two Shits.
Ah, well, listeners, you know, take one thing away from this podcast, it's the expression Johnny Two Shits.
I'm bringing it in.
Yeah, do it. What was I saying? Oh, yeah.
When you wrote your first book.
Because it was just an A to Z of life, I wrote about anxiety and depression because they're parts of my life. And it was like going back to what you said about doing, kind of talking about it on stage, the fact that it's you are representing yourself and you're talking about things that are important to you. And when you've lived with these things for so long, you do kind of just kind of become more inclined to have a bit of a joke with them, to make a bit fun of them. Mm-hmm. I do it because it makes it feel smaller for me. If I can laugh at it, it makes it seem like it's not all encompassing. Also, it's ruined my fucking life, so I'm going to joke about it. I want to joke about it. But it is nice, like, the fact that the conversation is getting bigger, and the fact that people can just kind of put these jokes into their shows and it's not the all-encompassing subject of the show. Because what I like about the way you discuss it is that you kind of just move on then to like another story or another theme. It's not the huge overarching thing of it.
And I think that it's just like, it's always, so I think about it quite often in terms of when I discuss race in stand-up. Like, I don't want that to be the be-all and end-all of the thing, because it's like, no, this is a thing that informs part of my existence as a three-dimensional human being, but because I am a three-dimensional human being, as everyone is, it's not just one thing.
Yep.
And there's all of these other things that are going on, so let's talk about all of them and not reduce anyone to one facet of themselves.
Yeah, indeed. So when did you start kind of putting the mental health stuff into your comedy?
So I remember trying it first in a show several years ago, and it didn't work. But it just didn't work in the context of the show. So I ended up saving that for later.
Okay.
And I think probably now, a couple of years ago, I started talking about it probably. And last year for the largest section.
Mm-hmm.
But like, for example, last year there was a period during the Edinburgh Festival particularly, but there was a period of a year where I came off medication for the first time in a long time. And so there were a lot of associated changes that I thought were interesting to discuss, and I have gone back on medication. Top tip, do not do the Edinburgh Festival running on serotonin fumes, because, oh boy,
that's a
real dizzy.
What made you want to go off the medication?
So basically, because I'd been on for a while, and I would always speak to my GP is a very good and old friend.
Mm-hmm.
Grew up next door to my grandmother, so I've known him for years. And he like was very much of the opinion that while stuff like the medication definitely has a time and a place in life, perhaps it doesn't need to be every day for the rest of your life, and maybe you can also look at other things in life. And I was inclined to agree at the time. So we just did like, all right, first we'll just think about reducing the dosage, see how we get on, but come off in the medium term.
Mm-hmm.
And see what that's like. And sort of, I'm happy in retrospect that I tried it out.
Yeah.
Because I learned things that I think it was important to learn, but equally am now on them again and think that that is the right thing for me.
Yeah.
But it's all going to depend on the individual, right?
Oh, completely, yeah. Honestly. Your recovery is just as individualistic as your, well, mental health.
Yeah.
What was the weirdest side effect when you
anorgasmia?
Oh, is that where you can't come?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As I said in the old show, I've watched a porno to the end.
Sorry.
I was going to ask, because you are very smart and you do a lot of like political stuff. How much do you think politics at the minute is battering people's mental health? Like the climate that we're living in.
I had a situation where I used to get fucking push alerts anytime Donald Trump tweeted.
Mm.
And then I was just like, why am I doing
it?
Like, there is no conceivable world in which this does. It's like, oh, right, would you like to be updated every time someone you think is terrible for the entirety of humanity says brain fart?
Yeah.
I'm just like, no, turn that off. I used to be very much a news obsessive, news junkie and everything. And it's like, no, no good. I want to, like, you know, mm-hmm. And you end up realizing that from, you know, cultural osmosis and just chatting to people and what have you, you pick up on the main beats anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, it's not like I'm suddenly being like, have we left the European Union now? I'm not sure whether or not that's occurred. And I still, like, I know who the Prime Minister is, even if the country does not.
Yeah.
Well, actually, I don't know who the Prime Minister is because we don't currently have one.
No.
It's
a free-for-all.
Or, no, rather, we don't have a leader of the Conservative Party. We have a Prime Minister.
She's still Prime Minister?
I think she's still Prime Minister, but no longer leader of the Conservative Party.
Oh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Oh, that's just horrible.
All the other way around.
No, she doesn't have to
Maybe
answer.
Maybe I should
it.
Read the news. Yeah.
That's true. She doesn't need to answer to anyone. She could just go really weird with it.
Yeah, she can revoke Article 50.
Yeah, do it. Go bonkers with it.
Go on, Theresa. For the bands.
What a leaving party.
Yeah. And you find that that's just really kind of helped on a day-to-day basis? Because I had to do something similar as well, where I was hate-following quite a few people.
Yeah.
And just because they were complete arseholes, but then I quite like to know what their fucking terrible opinions were. And then I woke up one morning and was like, no, I don't want to know what their terrible opinions are. Stay over there in your own little weird thing. I don't get the whole echo chamber argument thing, because you don't want to spend the day looking at Nazis and white supremacists if you don't have to.
And your social media is a choice. Like, you choose who you want to follow. So when people are like, whoa, you're living in an echo chamber, I'm like, I'm living in a chamber full of dogs and drag queens, and it's fucking brilliant.
Yeah.
Thank you.
But also, like, I think that you do have, and I don't think that a vast amount of social media is healthy in both senses.
Yeah.
Right? Either consuming a vast amount of it, or indeed the vast amount of it that is out there. But, like, you know, it's not a binary between only engaging with people who agree with me on absolutely everything or hate following white supremacists and Nazis.
That's the only two ways you can do social media.
Exactly. Like, and I think, like, I do actually think that it is a bit of a problem that, you know, conversation and argument has moved from the pub to the internet.
Yeah.
Where, so, for example, like, there will be lots of perfectly reasonable people who I will have disagreed disagreements with about marginal tax rates and things like that, and that is an entirely fine thing to disagree with. But I've certainly seen it happen to people I know, where if you aren't really in person engaging with other people that frequently on their opinions, but are consuming a hell of a lot of online media, all of which is geared to absolutely back up your preconceived notions or what you would like to, and is all very targeted and catered for you.
Yep.
I know that that can actually be very destructive for the way that people think. So I do think that there is a, like, obviously the dogs and drag queens thing sounds really nice.
Yeah, it's mostly dog accounts I follow now, to be honest.
It's because it's not that I like when people use the argument like, you only want to hear from people who think the same as you. I'm like, it's not that. I just don't, I'm at a place now where I only want to see things that make me laugh. Mm. That's what I want. Mm. It's not that I only want to engage with people. Like, I follow people of opposite political beliefs to me, but they post things that make me laugh. And I'm like, that's what I want. I want my social media feed to just be somewhere where I can look and be like, that's nice. Not somewhere where I can be like, the world is burning. Yeah. Oh, God.
Yeah. I've got an inverted commas Twitter friend, you know, so a person I've never met, IRL, but who I really like following because he and I have like polar opposite views on Brexit. He's like a big Leave voter, still supports it and everything, but is generally a warm, intelligent, thoughtful, funny person.
Yeah.
And I was like, that's fine. I still like, even if I disagree with this stuff and you, and he'll be exactly the same with me, that every so often I'll post something and he'll be like, oh, there he is on his high horse again. But then I tell a dumb joke about toast, and then it's like, this is
that's it.
This is the content I come for.
When did you start introducing? Sorry, I know I should be interviewing you, but I'm quite interested. When did you start introducing mental health into your stand-up?
Only when I did my first hour, and then that was like, 2017, and I had one kind of little joke about it, and that was it, really. I think, again, with hindsight, looking back, that whole show was a big old mental health show, but it wasn't overtly a mental health show. But I don't think I even realised until probably quite recently that I was like, oh, yeah, there was a lot more in that about mental health than I thought there was, because there was a lot about, like, self-esteem and what you think of yourself and blaming yourself rather than blaming other people. But I didn't perceive any of that to be mental health at the time, and especially as, a young woman. And then the next show, I found it a bit easier to physically say words like depression and anxiety, whereas I think maybe just something in my own head hadn't understood that in the first show. But by the time of the second one, I was like, oh, no, this is mental health and this is anxiety and this is depression. Mm-hmm. I've talked about it a bit more. I think I only spoke about it for maybe about 5 minutes in the hour, but still probably with a bit more forwardness than I had in the other one.
Mm. I don't particularly like using the words on stage, and I think that's why I say clinically tense emotion and stuff like that, because also part of the reason that I went off medication is that I did honestly feel like maybe in certain circumstances we become quite keen to medicalize sadness when it can it is also to a certain extent a normal function
of
existence. To me personally, it feels like it creates this entity that's somehow separate from me, and that thing is like, oh, there's the gremlin over there, and then there's me, whereas actually the two are intertwined and inseparable.
Yeah, definitely.
And these are just like, to a certain extent, the way that I am, which unfortunately I have to mitigate myself. Basically, like every morning, just as you say, stand in front of the mirror, put a few things in your mouth and swallow it, and you're just like, there's too much this. Like, there's less are here. It's like, could you not just make 10 are here louder and have that be the loudest one? This are here goes up to 11.
So, you know, when you're at a silent disco and you've got, like, there'll be two DJs playing and you've got one in one ear and one in the other and you flick between the channels, that's what it's like. It's like, well, nope, depress Lawrence too loud.
Left ear's being like, party rockers in the house tonight. Right ear's being like, kill yourself.
Hello, darkness, my old friend.
Well, we've got about 5 minutes left, so do you want to...
Oh, I'm having fun. No, we don't.
Let's make it an extra long edition.
Presumably this is getting edited down anyway.
Oh, yes, absolutely.
I doubt that any references to suicide will be making it into the...
Absolutely will. We're not sponsored by, we're brought to you by a suicide prevention charity, so it can only go well.
Who I just learned have T-shirts. And that guy tweeted us and said he got a T-shirt. I was like, I'm totally getting a T-shirt.
Yeah, where's our T-shirt, guys?
Yeah.
After all we've done for you.
I only partake in charitable events if I get a T-shirt.
And a goodie bag.
I have just come through a 2-month-long extended mental health crisis and all I got was this lousy T-shirt.
Yeah, that's what... Exactly.
If anyone can make that up for me...
That's what we need, merch.
Yeah, done. That'll be the first T-shirt. Oh, God, I'd wear that every day. Yeah. That'd be amazing.
Is this our last question? We ask everybody this, and it's if you could go back in time to when you were younger and give yourself some advice on, like, mental health and living life with a bit less misery, what would you tell yourself?
It's very difficult to know the degree to which certain things are avoidable. Like, I don't know if I had, you know, taken different paths or what have you, that things might have ended up similarly or differently or however. I would tell younger me that you're going to tell jokes for a living, and I think that he would be quite buoyed by that, generally, because that's quite a fun thing to be able to do. I think that be kind because everyone is fighting an unwinnable war. And I think that that's a good thing to hear probably quite young, where it's like, look, cards on the table. I know it's not fair or it doesn't seem fair, but you are going to be fighting an unwinnable war for the rest of your life.
Yeah.
I'm terribly sorry about that. However, arm yourself as effectively as possible, because there are certainly ways in which the said war can be more easily lost, even if it can't ever be completely won. Mm-hmm. But there are, yes, certain mitigating factors that one might pursue. Mm-hmm. So, yes, I think I'd say that.
That's excellent.
Yeah.
That was really lovely. Well, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you for having me.
That was amazing.
Lovely. Ah. We hope you can take something from this podcast away with you in your day-to-day life. Whatever situation you're in, you're not by yourself. We can share our stories, share our experiences, we can help each other know that things do get better.
And that's episode 10 of Conversations Against Living Miserably. Thank you so much for listening. Without you guys, it's just a comedian and a complete idiot harassing stand-ups about their mental health, which is a really weird premise, to be honest. If you can remember to like, subscribe, rate, review, tweet about the podcast, hire a skywriter to advertise about the podcast... if you've got the money, I mean, we don't. The more people that listen, the more money that goes to Calm, which is just pretty tidy, really. Anyway, thanks to Ahir Shah for letting us bother him for a bit. And if you wanted to catch his new show, Dots, he'll be at the Monkey Barrel at this year's Edinburgh Fringe Festival. Thank you to Lauren for putting up with me every week. Bless her. Thanks to Dave for helping us make this podcast. Thanks to Calm, obviously. They're really good. And thanks to you. Anyway, if you can come back next week, that'd be really much appreciated. Otherwise, it's just me talking to myself. Anyway, bye.
Planning for your next trip? Elevate your travel style with Quince. Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/trip for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. Invesco QQQ is proud to sponsor this episode and even prouder to provide access to innovation for the last 25 years. Basketball has had innovations over the years, too. We're seeing the game played in new ways every day. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Would you give your mom, dad, aunt, or that uncle who hugged your partner a little too long free access to your phone?
Oh, no!
Oh, my God, it's a really long video.
Ew!
In Dave's brand new YouTube original, Get Off My Phone, we've got 6 comedians to give their phones over to a relative with total freedom to read messages, DMs, photos, and browser history.
Where's your search history?
Sorry?
What to do, tips for relief.
The rules are simple. Their relative can read anything they want and even make calls from the comedian's phone.
What is this?
What is... I don't want this one.
That looks really bad.
Starring Tanya Moore, Anya Magliano, Finlay Christie, Travis J with his mum Angie Lamar, Hayley Morris, Grace Campbell and dad Alistair Campbell.
Slightly sexually compromising people.
Divulging their deepest digital secrets.
What the hell is happening?
Get Off My Phone, a Dave YouTube original. Available now on Dave's YouTube channel.